Good morning, everyone. We're going to call this meeting of the TRP Operations and Governance Committee to order. The date is Wednesday, October 26, 2022. We're here at the TRPA offices on Market Street, and the time is about 8:35. First item on the agenda is the roll call to determine the quorum. Maria?
Ms. Aldean?
Here.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Say it one more time, Secretary.
I'm here.
Ms. Diss?
Here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Ms. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Honigman?
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. We will now go over the remote and in-person meeting rules for the day. For the members of the public who are joining us remotely to observe the meeting, go to trpa.gov under the calendar heading. Click on Governing Board Hybrid Meeting for October 26, 27, 2022. There you will find a link to the public webinar hosted on Zoom. To address committee members directly with your comments, raise your hand in Zoom by clicking Raise Hand at the bottom of your screen at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the committee. If you have used the dial-in numbers to join us by telephone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand and be unmuted. To remote committee members, if you wish to speak, you can also now raise your hand in Zoom. You will find the hand icon on the bottom of your screen. Remote committee members may not use the chat box to make any comments or to have sidebar conversations. Please, everyone, remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. Finally, I would also like to ask all remote members, if possible, to turn on their cameras if they are in a position to do so. Members of the public who have joined us in person, please raise your hand at the appropriate time for public comment, and you will be called on to speak. Committee members who are in person, please raise your hand if you wish to comment and speak clearly into the microphone in front of you. If you're viewing the webinar on a personal computer, please ensure that your microphone and speakers are turned off to prevent audio feedback into the room. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Any changes to the agenda, Chris?
There are no changes to the published agenda.
Okay, then we will deem the agenda approved as posted. We are now on item number 2, approval of the minutes. And we have a set of minutes from the meeting of September 28th, 2022 on page 9 of your packet. Does any member of the committee wish to make any changes? Okay, seeing committee members with any recommended changes or additions. All those in favor of approving the minutes from the September 28th meeting, please say aye.
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 Secretary is an aye.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Motion passes. The minutes are approved. Next item is item number 3, which is a recommendation to approve the September financials. Information on this item can be found on page 29 of the packet. Chris?
For the record, Chris Kyler, Finance Director for the agency. If I could have the first chart, please. Just some highlights for the for the month. We have had meetings with both the Nevada Governor's Budget Office and LCB. Those meetings, I think, went well. We're also starting to get some feedback from the California Department of Finance on the BCPs we submitted. Unfortunately, that feedback is not good. At this point, the California General Fund seems to be in a great deal of stress. When you look at the year-to-date numbers, their year-to-date revenue collection is 11% below the budget for the current year. So basically, at this point, they're rejecting almost every request for new funding against the general fund, not against the environmental license plate fund, which is where our baseline revenue comes from. But we submitted 2 BCPs against the general fund. The smaller one is a scanning project, and we're looking to see if we can't move that somewhere else or finance somewhere else. The big problem there is the state's portion of the 777 plan for transportation. This isn't the end of the day. This is just Department of Finance initial read, so all these decisions are appealable, and I'm sure Secretary Crowfoot will be having some conversations with Department of Finance and the governor's office on that going forward. And Julie's working with that on that. So not a good thing. The environmental license plate fund is in better shape, and we don't anticipate any problems with our baseline revenue from the state of California. For that matter, same thing, I haven't heard anything in the harbors and watercraft revolving fund, which is where we get a lot of the AIS money and some boat money. So didn't want to hear that, but we're working it. And then just the other final note is we're starting to look at open enrollment for our benefit plans for the next year. Anthem came in and said, hey, What do you think about a 5% premium increase for health insurance, which from everything we're seeing looks like a pretty good deal? So we're going to grab a hold of that. They're our current provider.
Yeah, with inflation at 8.3%, that's probably a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I think I looked at the feds. They're talking about an 8.5% increase in premiums for federal employees. And certainly we've seen that inflation in the medical field on the cost side is much higher than that. So we kind of felt like that was a good deal. And we'll do open enrollment over the next month or two. If I can have the next chart, please. Money-wise, everything's pretty much on track where we want to be at this time of the year. Obviously, we have that huge surplus in the state and local column. That's because we receive the state money up front. So we have all the revenue up front, and that money will steadily go down as we continue through the year. Grants look weird because we build the grants quarterly, so we're just now preparing the grants for this first quarter of the fiscal year, and that's why there's almost no revenue in there. Fees continue running strongly, especially in the planning area. They continue to run against higher than prior years. In August, we set kind of a new monthly record for August, and never been that high. And that's reflected on the volume side, too, in terms of the number of applications we're getting in. So at this point, we're not seeing any reduction in our activity based on people pulling back based on a recession or something like that. If I could have the next chart, please. This shows where we are with budget. Obviously, the state revenue is almost entirely in. We're at about 30% of fees for services. That includes the inspection fees for the boats and for shoreline. The boating inspection fees will go up in the next couple of months as we settle up with the boat ramps at the end of the boating season. But that'll go quiet then throughout the spring, summer, the winter, I'm sorry, until we get to next spring when people start getting their boats inspected and things like that. On the expenditure side, compensation is about where we would expect to be at this point. We do have three openings right now that we're working to fill, GIS tech, grants manager, financial analyst in my area, and an executive director, which you people hopefully will fill in the next couple of days. Tomorrow. Since that, if I could have the next chart, please. This is the, I mentioned to you a couple of times, we have this GASB 84 thing where we're now required to report a lot of our mitigation funds as revenue expenses. Now, I'm not wrapping that into the baseline financials I'm showing you because it creates a huge distortion because of timing issues. We collect the mitigation funds as people come in and get their permits. But of course, we don't disperse them until one of the partner agencies come in with a specific project, like CTC is doing soon. So what this is telling you is it kind of shows that huge discrepancy there. We've taken in $1.7 million in mitigation funds in the first quarter, but we've only made one disbursement to the city of South Lake Tahoe for just under $500,000. And in any given year, this can be a huge positive or a huge negative. So that's why I pull it out of the baseline revenues. But I did promise you I would brief you on this periodically, like quarterly or something like that. So I wanted you to see those numbers. Next chart, please. Then here's our cash flow. We got that huge spike in August because both states' contributions came in the same month. And now we're beginning the long, steady decline over time. And I will say that this includes things that don't show up in revenues and expenses. So like a securities return or securities coming in is part of the cash flow, but it's not part of revenues and expenditures. And when we transfer that big money, that big check to CTC for the Motel 6 property, we're going to go negative for the year. Mm-hmm. And we will probably finish the year negative. That's fine. It's coming off the balance sheet. It's coming off of accrued mitigation funds. And that's, I think, all I have, unless somebody has any questions for me.
Chris, are we seeing any slowdown in applications being filed with the agency, or are people kind of rushing to the finish line? I'm anticipating that something will happen if inflation continues. People may elect to delay submitting a project application, but that hasn't been the case.
I would characterize where we are now as we're watching, you know, the proverbial rat go through the snake. For the past few years, we've seen a lot of activity on the upfront stuff.
Like that's a very graphic analogy. Yeah. Having had snakes, that's a very graphic analogy.
Yeah. So what we're seeing now is the shift to the actual project itself.
Okay.
So I think that's why the fees remain high, as people are actually executing on the permits they're wanting to execute on the permits.
Right.
I would
invite others to jump in.
I was going to say there are some large projects in the pre-application stage that have slowed down,
mm-hmm.
that have said we need to go back and refinance.
And also they're looking at material expenses. Obviously, materials have gone up in price.
These are large projects you've probably heard of.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you, John. Appreciate that. All right. Okay. Is that the end of your presentation, Chris?
Yes.
All right. Very succinct as usual. Any members of the committee have any questions for Chris on this item? All right. That includes our remote members. Alexis, do you have any questions?
No questions.
Okay, thank you, Alexis. Barbara, do you have any questions regarding the September financials?
No, I do not.
Okay, thank you. All right, then we will now go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the Operations and Governance Committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person or by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen, or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you'll be called on and unmuted by our TRPA staff member. Tracy will be handling, or Maria.
Madam Chair, Maria?
Yes.
I will be handling that for you.
Okay.
And we have no hands raised for public comment.
Okay, all right, thank you. Any members, I don't see any, well, I see some public members. Anyone in the audience wish to make a comment on this item? All right, seeing none, we will close public comment. And if there are no further comments by members of the committee, I will entertain a motion to recommend to the governing board the approval of the September financials. Okay, Vince, we have a motion. Any comments on the question? Seeing none, Mari, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Ms. Diss?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Great, thank you. That brings us to item number 4 on our agenda, discussion and possible recommendation of an inflation adjustment to the TRPA application filing fee schedule. The information on this item can be found on page 53 of your packet. And Allie, good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Allie Borowski. I'm a senior planner with the Permitting and Compliance Department. Today, we're talking about the recommendation and adjustment to the filing fee schedule.
It's even done in that right now. So.
So we are recommending an 8.3% increase to the filing fee schedule, and that's based on the Western Region Consumer Price Index. The present level of filing fees do not currently cover the costs for the current planning department, and so that's why we are recommending this adjustment. The filing fee schedule will go into effect January 23rd, 2020. We have been doing annual increases. The first one we did was in 2018, and that one was actually a 30% increase, and that was the first one we had done since 2007. 2019, we did a 3% increase. 2020, we did a 3% increase. And then last year, 2021, we did a 5.3% increase. There is some other changes we're making to the filing fee schedule. Those are really for clarification and making the filing fee schedule more helpful for applicants and people using it. We adjusted the location of a couple things and added some clarification language to make it easier to use. We have already contacted our MOU partners, so Placer County, El Dorado County, the City of South Lake Tahoe, to let them know about this adjustment. And I think that's all I have for now.
Okay, thank you. And just as a note, I read that most of you probably remember that an 8% adjustment was actually incorporated into the budget. So it's a slightly higher, obviously, by 0.3% than what was originally budgeted. Allie, I have a question. Just since you're making some clarifying changes, I noticed that is the only place in the basin where domestic animals can be raised, is it only in residential neighborhoods, or is it in other areas that are differently zoned? I noticed it ended up under changes of use and other activities, and that seemed kind of incongruous. So I'm just wondering if it shouldn't be under the general, into the general category heading.
That's a great question. And, you know, each plan area statement has different allowable uses, and that also includes area plans. So I'm not 100% sure which plan area statements allow it. I know it is one in Christmas Valley, which is a residential mm-hmm. neighborhood. I know we also have animal grazing as a separate use, which is under general. So those uses are actually clear in the code under allowed uses where they're labeled. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And then I had another question about other, which has a specific amount allocated to it, but how can we set a fee if the nature of the activity is undetermined? Shouldn't that be to be determined? I'm just wondering how we came up with those specific amounts under other, if we don't know the nature of the activity. Is that a yeah. minimum fee?
That's a great question. You know, it doesn't say deposit account per se, but those are instances where maybe it doesn't exactly fall under one category, and potentially we would use that for something else. It's really dependent on the project. So it's really case by case. You know, if we're working with someone and they tell us their project description and it doesn't really fit under one category, we may suggest they use the other. So I think typically when other is used, we're highly aware of the project and determined it will fit in that category.
If I can jump in just to clarify, there's two sets of fees, right? There's the ones that are fixed fees, and those are the ones that we're increasing by the inflation adjustment. But there's a number of other areas where the fee is more of a variable, what Ellie was talking about with the deposit account, where we basically bill the actual cost, and that would be for most of the major projects and stuff like that. So you call it a deposit account, but we require them to put money up front, and we spend down against it. And if we spend all that, we'll ask for more money, and if we don't spend it all, we get more.
Right, but the fee is being adjusted in accordance with the 8.3% under the other category as well. And I'm just wondering if this is kind of it may be a little bit confusing for an applicant. I mean, shouldn't it be TBD to be determined depending on the nature of the activity?
I'll give you one example of why we might use other. So in the filing fee schedule, additions, modifications is based on floor area of the modification. So if we are redoing a project where, let's say it's on the lake and they're changing the facade of the structure from the lake, that project we know is going to take a little bit longer than something that isn't on the lake. So the minimum fee for residential modification, if there was zero new or modified floor area, would be around $900, but that other fee is a little bit more. So that gives us a little bit more room to say, please use the other fee, because we know this review might take a little bit longer than if it wasn't. I'm like, that's one example of where we use other a lot.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. I don't think I have any other questions. Any questions by members of the committee on this amended schedule?
Well, I thought it was a good point you raised. I do think it's good to have that minimum, because often I think it probably takes staff some period of time to determine with the variety and unique requests that you receive. I just, you know, I look at some of the things that come up that don't fall cleanly into a category. Yeah. And so, you know, really when you start to look at the amount of staff time that goes into that discussion, when I look at it in context with the other fees, even though 809, the new base fee sounds high, it's falling into that because it is complicated and mm-hmm. it's going to take some time. So I see your point, Shelley, but I can also see why trying to capture that with some sort of minimum, so people don't spend a huge amount of time with staff trying to mm-hmm. figure out something else. And so okay. that I just wanted to support that.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy.
It seems like whatever category you give, there's
of course.
There's a one-off that yeah. you haven't anticipated.
There's something that's unique. Any other comments by members of the committee?
Yes, Alexis. Madam Chair.
Yes, Alexis.
Thank you. I I don't, it's not necessarily a comment on the increase of fees, but I do think there may be an opportunity for the board in the future, certainly maybe not today, but to look at uses that we need to support as a community. So daycare centers, preschools, that is a large fee, and they're grouped in with colleges and schools. And also public owned assembly and entertainment. And I don't know, if that is something that the board should look at in the future to see if we want to support daycares. And I know that in my district in Klein Village and Crystal Bay, I think there's only one daycare, and it's a real problem in that community. So it's just something I wanted to bring to put on the record and see if we can discuss it at a later date.
Madam Chair, if I can.
Yes, go ahead.
You may remember from when Arlo Stockham brought the process improvement proposal to you that you all accepted. He's looking at not only pulling all the fees out and putting them into a schedule so we don't have to amend the rules of procedure or code, but also he's looking at some fees, some types of development we subsidize and some types cost more than their counterparts that are counterintuitive when you look at the regional plan policy. So he's going to be looking at that. I know that he pointed out it costs more to do multifamily per unit in town centers than it does single family in the areas, the more hinterland areas, which we're trying to discourage. So he's going to be looking at those kind of questions. So at that point, maybe Alexis, we can be looking at the types of uses you're talking about too. I'll pass that on to him.
Just as a representative from a county where we only have 45, we're only meeting 45% of the need for daycare. That is many, there's other uses as well, I'm sure we could talk about, but thank you very much for stating that that's something we'll be looking at.
And I'll certainly actually, one top of mind for you, right?
Yep.
I've got a child in my room right now, that's why I'm not there, but I will be there at 11.
I will ask him to contact you directly.
So that brings up the question, how much flexibility does staff have with respect to these fees? I mean, are they allowed to consider extenuating circumstances, or are they obligated to, is the agency obligated to use this fee schedule in every instance?
Unless they're in the other category, like Allie was talking about, mm-hmm. we pretty much use what's in the code.
Okay.
If it's something that has some discretion because it's like a chargeback or something like that, we exercise discretion, but otherwise, no.
Okay. So, and I guess the other question is, I mean, Alexis brings up a good point, but at some point we'll probably reach saturation, at which point we should reevaluate whether or not going forward some sort of allowance should be made for certain types of uses. So, that needs to be, I think we need to reexamine these schedules periodically, not just to adjust the fee itself, but to these specific exempt categories.
Yeah, my understanding of what Arlo presented to you all and you all accepted was two objectives. One is that the permitting and compliance pays for itself, but the second is there are certain things that we want to encourage and other things we don't so much. So
like affordable housing, right?
Well, and we already waived the fee on affordable housing. So what that really means is the other fees will probably have to go up a little bit to capture that if it's going to meet the objective of paying for itself. But that's a good policy decision for you all tonight.
Okay.
And if I could jump in on that, sure, just please, as a finance person, is that's then the question is, if you're going to waive some fees, where right. does the money come from? Where's the cross subsidy? Are you going to charge other applicants more, or are you going to subsidize it from the government?
Right. So well, in the case of daycare, not that I want to, being in business myself, place additional burden on businesses, but the assumption is that people need daycare so that they can go to their jobs and be gainfully employed. So maybe that would be a reasonable place to increase the fees. Okay. All right. Yes.
I just wanted to second everything Alexis said. She took most of the words right out of my mouth. So I was going to.
I think you two ladies have a conflict of interest.
The daycare and preschools item jumped out at me too. I think in particular in Nevada, I'm sure it's been the same in California, but we suffered a lot of daycare closures during COVID and they did not reopen. So we are
not serving, as Alexis mentioned, in her part of Washoe County, but in general across the state, we're not able to serve the needs of the working public. And so people can't go back to work, and it just ends up being this sort of cycle. And, you know, childcare is infrastructure, according to the federal government latest policy statements. So I appreciate Alexis bringing it up, because I agree. I think if, at a later date, if we could take a look at it and try to figure out if it's something like affordable housing that we want to waive the fees for, or, you know, pass the fees on to employers or something like that. I just wanted to second those comments.
Okay. Thank you, Jessica. Appreciate it. Yes, Allie.
I'll just add one other thing. Home occupation is exempt with TRPA. So there is, so let's say they do it in their home, then technically they wouldn't apply with us. It would only be if it was a standalone facility. So I just want to make sure that's on the table.
Okay. That's good to know. All right. Any other comments? Yes, Vince.
I was just going to ask, so are we going to put it on the calendar to review all these fees at some point to see where we want to adjust things?
It's you were here for that meeting, but we brought a process improvement proposal in the month we did the innovation initiative. And Arlo presented all that. One of the things in his action plan is to bring that back to you.
Great. Perfect. Thanks.
Okay. Any other comments by members of the committee? All right. Seeing none, we will move to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the Operations and Governance Committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person or by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen, or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on and unmuted by a TRPA staff member. And we'll begin with public members in the room with us today, and I see none racing to the podium to make a comment. So, Maria, do we have any folks joining us on the phone or virtually?
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised to make public comment.
Okay, thank you. Then we will close public comment. If there are no further comments by the committee, I'll entertain a motion to recommend the governing board approve attached resolution 2022-, as shown in attachment A and exhibit 1, amending the TRPA application filing fee schedule.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion. Any comments on the question? All right, Maury, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski? I will circle back. Yeah, Ms. Diss?
Yes. Sorry, this is Scott Anderson. The secretary voted yes.
Thank you, Scott.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Allie. That brings us to agenda item number 5, which is a briefing by the California Tahoe Conservancy on the use of excess coverage mitigation fees. Information on this item can be found on page 275 of the packet. And Jen will be presenting. Is Jen presenting?
Yes, Ms. Chair, I'm here. This is Jen Self.
Hey, Jen. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, and members of the committee. Thanks so much for having us. For the record, Jen Self with DRPA. I'm the long-range planning principal planner and program manager. I'm here today also with Kevin Pryor and Amy Rutledge of the California Tahoe Conservancy. As you all are aware, even going over the budget this morning, TRPA collects certain mitigation fees as part of our permitting process. So in addition to those application fees that you just heard, one of these fees is for excess coverage mitigation. And these funds are exclusively reserved for our land banks. The release of these funds is reviewed and approved by this committee. This particular presentation, it's a little outside of the norm. Typically, a partner agency would come forward with a request to this committee, and you would make an action or a motion on that the same day. We're bringing this item forward as just an informational item to give you a little bit of background in preparation for next month when a request will actually happen. So this is no action is being requested today, just a little bit of an informational item, and then a chance for you all to hear a little bit more about the project that's the subject of this request, and to ask us any questions. So I'm going to go ahead and go over a little bit of just an overview very quickly of the land bank and the excess coverage mitigation program. Kevin and Amy Rutledge are going to provide an overview of the Motel 6 acquisition, which is the subject of this request. And then we'll open it up for your questions and comments. So as I mentioned, so next month, CTC plans to come back with that request, and this is for the Motel 6 site that's located in South Lake Tahoe. This particular project has been on the radar for a number of decades. It really has huge implications that are positive on both the environmental side of things and meeting the goals of our regional plan, as well as community benefits. The funding request from California Tahoe Conservancy next month may be upwards of $3.5 million, and that would be coming from the TRPA-held excess mitigation fund, and that amount would be matched by 4 to 5 other California state funding sources. So due to the scale and scope of not only of the project and its importance, but also the amount that's going to be requested, we just thought it'd be best to go ahead and have a kind of a precursor conversation with you all today. Just important to note here, this project has not yet commenced, and the acquisition hasn't occurred yet. This is something where CTC is in negotiations right now as we speak with the property owner, and those have been ongoing for some time now. Let's go on to the next slide. So real quickly, let's go over just kind of the history of the land bank program that we have here in Tahoe. This will be a reminder for some, and it may be some new information for others that are newer to the governing board. Land banks are really a critical piece to help us meet the goals of the regional plan. There is currently 2 operating land banks within the Tahoe Basin, and TRPA has MOUs in place with both of those. That is the California Tahoe Conservancy on the California side under their Tahoe Livable Communities Program. And then there's the Nevada Division of State Lands that operate a land bank on the Nevada side. And these land banks were established specifically to focus on the goals that are shown on this screen. In a nutshell, these land banks are really designed to acquire land and legacy development on outlying or sensitive lands, restore those areas, and then transfer that development potential to town center. So not only does it, you know, meet restoring critical ecosystems on sensitive lands, but it also helps to accelerate redevelopment because it's moving that development potential to where we want to see it. In addition to the goals here on the screen, the land banks also serve as a repository for development rights. So tourist accommodation units, residential units, commercial floor area, land coverage. They serve as a repository for those development rights when public and private partners are going to develop elsewhere and are looking for rights to transfer to their property. The land banks are one source that they can go to. In addition to the development rights and development potential, the land banks also acquire asset lands. So a prime example of this was the asset lands that were in the Tahoe Valley Town Center at the Y that were then used for the Sugar Pine housing redevelopment project that's going on now. The MOUs that we have in place with both the land banks, they really define further the role of the land banks, that dedicated funding source from the excess coverage mitigation program. And then it also outlines basic requirements of how they can use those funds and aligning those with both state and regional planned priorities. Let's go to the next slide. So this slide, the graphics are just sort of for explanation or, you know, examples. It just kind of shows you know, here's a goal of the regional plan. We have legacy development, that's the A-frame structure on the left, on sensitive lands, the CTC as part of their program, or the Nevada Division of State Lands may acquire this parcel, remove the development, start to restore that land. That's the picture in the middle. That's the restoration has just started to occur there, and then transfer those to other infill development in town centers. So this slide is just kind of showing a graphic representation of kind of what this process may look like. Let's go to the next slide. Talking about the excess coverage mitigation program. So on average, TRPA collects around $375,000 a year from this program. And these fees are based on the scope of the project, so the construction costs, the amount of excess coverage that would be existing on a parcel, and then also where a project is located. So projects in more sensitive watersheds, think kind of steep terrain over near Cave Rock, will pay more through the excess coverage mitigation and through that calculation than projects in less sensitive watersheds. Again, as a reminder, that land coverage is really just the footprint of built development on the landscape, and that's regulated at a parcel level, driveways, decks, the actual building footprint, things like that. Each parcel does have that coverage limit as defined by our code, and the excess coverage is the existing coverage on parcels that go above and beyond the allowable limit today. So this is legally existing coverage that TRPA has verified that would have existed prior to our land coverage regulations. So think about a home built in the 1950s, 1960s. They may have coverage above and beyond what we would allow today, but TRPA can go in and verify, yes, even though it does go above and beyond, that was built with permits at the time that it was construction. So once folks have that coverage or excess coverage on the property, they have the option to continue to use it. The option, if they want to continue to use excess coverage above and beyond the allowable today, they would either need to pay an excess coverage mitigation fee or actually remove some of that coverage. The majority of property owners that we see choose to elect just to pay the mitigation fees. And then that fund source goes into our excess coverage mitigation fund, again, held exclusively for the use of the land banks. And then our MOU outlines how we disperse that and then how those will be used. Let's see if there's anything else on this one. I think that's it. I don't want to go into too much detail on this. I really wanted to reserve the bulk of this presentation for Kevin and Amy to talk more about this exciting project and the request that will be coming forward. I'll go ahead and pause my portion of the presentation now, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Kevin and Amy. Kevin, are you there?
Jen, before we do that, could mm-hmm. we entertain questions on your presentation?
Absolutely.
Vince, please.
Thank you. I'm a little new, Jen, so I just had a couple questions about the program. So what is it that triggers the excess mitigation fees to be assessed? Is it at the sale or pulling a permit for some new work? I was just curious about that. I just wanted to understand that. And then I also wanted to understand the process for figuring out which properties receive the funding or which projects. Is that driven by CTC in Nevada, or is that TRPA, or kind of a combination of everyone? I mean, I've heard about this particular project for a while, so I know it's an important one, but just curious how they're prioritized, because I imagine we have many, many more projects than funds. So just curious about that process. Thanks.
Absolutely. Those are excellent questions. So going to the first question of kind of when are the excess coverage mitigation fees triggered, that is during the TRPA permitting process. So paying a mitigation fee or potentially removing coverage would not be triggered, so to speak, unless someone is coming forward with either A redevelopment of the entire site or any project that would require a TRPA permit. So after they've submitted the application, submitted the filing fees, it goes through the permitting stage, and before that permit is finalized, there may be mitigation fees that are included, excess coverage being just one of those. So they could also be required to pay an air quality mitigation fee or water quality mitigation fee and excess coverage. How that particular excess coverage fee is calculated is based on construction cost. A project that is doing a small addition, they're not going to be paying an exorbitant amount of excess coverage mitigation fees. It's based on construction cost, where the project is located, and then the amount of excess coverage that they actually have on the property. So that's speaking to the first question that you asked. The second question is related to priorities of the land banks. And this is something that we've actually written into the MOUs for both CTC, California Tahoe Conservancy, and the Nevada Division of State Lands, where we have a disclaimer or provision within our MOU saying we will get together on an annual basis and sit down and discuss and collaborate on priorities under the acquisition. For the most part, a lot of the discretion, so to speak, about which particular parcels are being targeted for potential acquisition or restoration is with the land banks, and where TRPA staff come in the collaboration is to really make sure, okay, are these aligning with regional plan goals and policies? For example, we're not meeting performance measures on removing tourist accommodation units from remote areas. Are there properties that, we can look at in that regard, things like that. So we do get together on an annual basis and kind of match up, okay, what are state priorities that both of the agencies are, have the responsibility to uphold, and what are their priorities under the regional plan, and where can we find alignment with those? As you can imagine, having the development background yourself, a lot of these, looking at particular parcels or properties, they're kind of years in the making. And so this is something where there's a lot of irons in the fire, perhaps at one time. And it depends on kind of where they are in the process as far as which comes forward for an actual acquisition. Does that help answer your question, or do you have any follow-up?
I was curious also, is there a nonprofit partner in this so that if people make a sale at below market price, they could get a tax rebate, because they're doing it with a nonprofit entity, something like that. I know that that's been popular in a lot of other places, especially like I think it's a Sempervirens fund or something where they're getting all the redwood lands and restoring them. I know that that's used a lot. I was just curious if we had any means for that.
I'm trying to think of, examples offhand. The St. Joseph Land Trust is a nonprofit that is very active in the Tahoe Basin with a focus on housing projects. We did, under our Development Rights Strategic Initiative in 2018, TRPA did put in place certain incentives for philanthropic nonprofits to get involved in development right acquisitions and asset land acquisitions. As far as specific examples of other nonprofits that may be partnered with private developers, I'm having trouble thinking of specific ones offhand. Kevin and Amy may know of some, or other staff may know of some that just is not coming to mind offhand.
Vince, we've worked with Trust for Public Lands and other similar type entities in the past when there has been a need for, something to cover the gap between market price and, what will make the deal work.
Or is your question, Vince, relate more to somebody's interested in some sort of tax benefit that and they want to retire coverage on the property voluntarily, and they contribute that coverage to a nonprofit and receive those tax benefits. Is that okay?
One more quick question. Sorry. Have we ever thought about triggering the fees based on sale? I know it would be probably a big shock, but you know, making progress each time the property turns over, because those are situations, especially in a rising market, where people have, you know, good income coming in, and we could maybe accelerate the collection of those fees, because it seems like that would be something that happens a lot more frequently than even pulling permits and doing work on a property. So just curious if that's...
So you're thinking about transfer tax fees? Property transfers?
Yeah, that if the property, you know, a lot of cities, if the property is considered below requirements or, you know, suboptimal, whatever, that they're required to bring them up to code at the time of transfer. So in this case, we would require them to make some bump on excess coverage at each transfer.
I see.
How would that impact the grandfather status of over coverage?
I mean, we'd still be considered grandfather legally existing, but it would just be another trigger point, like BMPs, at which we would look to see, you know, progress being made towards
coverage.
Your coverage reduction to get, you know, properties down to their allowable levels.
Of course, there may be some circumstances where the amount of the sale, you know, it could be a, you know, a desperation sale, and there's not much profit being made by the selling party. So that would be.
I think the typical process in Nevada is real estate transfer tax, is what it's called. And I would defer to my colleague to my left, but I think tax is something we can't do. So we'd have to tie it to some sort of.
It would be a transfer fee.
Some sort of service like.
Go ahead, John.
No, we could probably do it on a transfer. It wouldn't be a tax; it'd be a mitigation fee. That, but you know, then you run into the issue of, you know, it's just it's another mechanism to speed the offset of having coverage, too much coverage in the basin on a good percentage of our lots. But it's one that comes with a policy debate as to whether or not it's a good opportunity to do that.
And
but it can't be discussed.
And if I could just
driving down now.
If I could just add just one kind of just anecdotal comment to that. I really welcome any chance that we have to explore, you know, fees or other mechanisms in our code to help us balance how are we meeting our regional plan goals and also encouraging redevelopment. I welcome that. And I'm glad that Vince brought this up. I think, you know, to take a look at something like that with our excess coverage mitigation program would take a substantial effort, just in the sense of, you know, I'm thinking of selfishly my own home I bought in Nevada a few years ago. It was a home that was built in the 1960s and had a great deal of excess coverage on the property. You know, to apply, you know, fees that we have in force today, that would likely, you know, cause the home to not be attainable to someone in my income bracket. And so that's something that we always want to try to balance, making sure that we're not increasing, you know, housing costs and, you know, things like that. And then also the way that the program is set up right now, where this excess coverage mitigation fee is essentially scalable based on the type of development project that you're doing, is beneficial to project applicants. And so you're not going to be hit with an exorbitant fee if you're doing a small addition that's needed on your home or a small remodel project. Whereas you may be needing to pay more if it's a total tear down rebuild or something to that extent. So just a few additional thoughts there.
Okay, thank you, Jen. Thank you, Vince. All right, I apologize for the delay, Kevin. Please proceed.
Sure, great. Engaged questions there and enjoying them. Kevin Pryor, Director of Lands with the Tahoe Conservancy. And as Jen said, Amy Rutledge is also on the call. She's told me that her label on her Zoom is me. So she's also on the call and has been helping me with this acquisition. As Jen said, this acquisition, the Motel 6, has been, I think, 30 years in the making, and we're still pursuing it. And we're here in front of you today to give you a little bit of an informational item about it and recognizing that it's a large ask. It's upwards of $3.7 million that we'll be seeking from the TRPA excess coverage mitigation fee pot for it. And we are excited about it. So let me kind of jump into the actual acquisition itself. So the map on the screen here, the properties outlined in yellow. The location of the proposed parcels are located on Highway 50 and Sunset Drive here in South Lake Tahoe. It's near the intersection of US Highway 50 and the Upper Truckee River. You can see the Upper Truckee River running through the property in yellow. The proposed acquisition is next to the Conservancy's Upper Truckee Marsh, which is a huge restoration project that we've been working on for years as well. And it's also downstream of the Tahoe Resource Conservation District's Johnson Meadow property. So hopefully that gives you kind of a context of the location of it. You can see on the slide too, the front box along Highway 50 is the developed portion of the property with the Motel 6, as well as the commercial restaurant. And then the back half of this aerial is upwards of 23 acres of mountain meadow and wetlands. Let's go to the next slide, please. So as discussed, these photos show the parcel's proposed acquisition. We are in ongoing negotiations with the property owners. They're the same landowners as both properties. The parcels are located in the floodplain of the Upper Truckee River and surrounded by conservancy and other public and private ownership. Both parcels front on the Upper Truckee River, and the parcels qualify for acquisition because they're environmentally sensitive. And they've been identified for a number of years as some of the highest priority acquisition in TRPA's regional plan, largely due to their proximity with the Upper Truckee River and the Upper Truckee Marsh. Just kind of a summary, what we call the first parcel, which is a parcel that everyone kind of associates it with, which is the front half of the parcel, that is consists of 4 acres on a former floodplain, which is what we call the Motel 6 parcel. The Motel 6 parcel sits on 8 feet of fill, which was, you know, obviously put there when it was built in the early 70s. Has an existing motel, restaurant building, and the parking area adjacent to the Upper Truckee River. So significant hard coverage and an SEZ here, as well as a number of tourists. It's, you know, 143 unit motel. So we're looking at a number of tourist accommodation units, as well as commercial floor area and some residential units of use on the property. The second parcel is the larger parcel, and it's kind of these two pictures on the lower part of the screen show you the mountain meadow. It's 27 acres, includes 23 acres of mountain meadow and wetlands. And if we were to own it, we will obviously preserve all of it into the future as open space and wildlife habitat. Why don't we go to the next slide, please? This map is just an aerial of kind of the overall Upper Truckee watershed. And it's significant to show because of just the patchwork of government or public ownership along the Upper Truckee River and why this key acquisition is important. It fills in and provides contiguous ownership through the Upper Truckee River corridor, showing, you know, we have a number of different ownership patterns here, but they're all either state ownership, city, or federal, including state parks. And so that's also kind of important to understand. So the the Motel 6 property is kind of wedged, as I said, in there between our Upper Truckee Marsh, that is the outlet to Lake Tahoe, and then between that and then the Johnson Meadows property that Tahoe Resource Conservation District recently acquired. So really a very strategic parcel. And that's why we're kind of here for you today, in front of you today, to make you aware of it, because it is a very large acquisition that's we've been working on for a number of years in partnership with TRPA staff on. I'll stop there. That's kind of our my overview of the acquisition, the potential acquisition, and the site itself. And I'll open up to any comments or questions.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Appreciate that. So what is the total cost of the acquisition?
Right now, we are governing board approved up to $10 million for the acquisition. And that also includes site stabilization, which would be the demolition of the buildings.
And there are some additional sources of money, obviously, because you're not asking for the full $10 million from the mitigation fund. So what are the additional sources of acquisition money?
Yeah, it's a real strong partnership. So we have everything from Wildlife Conservation Board. We have a grant with them that we're pursuing. We're pretty sure we're going to have that secured shortly. We also have a California Department of Fish and Wildlife grant that's been awarded and secured of a $1.5 million. We're also seeking acquisition money from from the TRPA of 3.7. And then we also have over, I think it's close to $4 million in state funds around from the Conservancy of General Fund climate mitigation monies and potentially Prop 68 monies. So it's a patchwork of different funding sources. So essentially two grants, the mitigation monies, and then some state funds.
So are these matching monies? In other words, I guess my question is, when would these funds be released from the mitigation fund? In other words, do you merely need an approval? In other words, for the TRPA governing board to say, yes, we support this project. We think it's environmentally very important that you acquire this property and restore it. And when the time comes, when you've secured funding from those other sources, then we will make those funds available. How has this been negotiated? Chris?
I'm looking up some other information.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm sure we could
repeat
that.
The question.
I think CTC would be coming in next month for the approval of the release.
But the money doesn't have to be released until the other funds are secured, right?
We've been talking with Kevin and staff, and what we'll probably do is we will transfer the money to the escrow.
Oh, okay.
With appropriate escrow instructions to be covered if for some reason the deal falls through.
Okay.
We'll handle that. It'll just take a few days to execute once you get ready to pull the trigger.
So is this money obviously is important in terms of leveraging the additional funding sources?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any questions from members of the committee? Yes, Cindy.
I may be speaking out of turn, so tell me if I am. Jason called me yesterday to brief me on the item. And Jason is executive director of CTC. And I believe there's some competition for the site. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. We're not the only
interested
party. And so we're very interested in the property. We continue to pursue it. We understand there's a number of offers in, and we are also assessing those offers. We're going through the state process to make sure that our offer is competitive and within the appraised value of the property. So that is, we're taking into account those offers currently, reassessing them, making sure our offer is within their appraised value that we feel is appropriate for the state.
And because there are tourist accommodation units and coverage and other assets, that's all taken into consideration as we acquire, because we could get paid back for some of those, right?
That's correct. And we are talking to TRPA about what is the right mix with those development rights. As we pursue the acquisition, the appraiser has a number of ways they go about analyzing what the highest and best use of the property is. And they value it based on those highest and best use determinations, encompassing in the assets of the property, such as the buildings and even the development rights. So they do a number of like different kind of ways of coming about what is the actual fair market value of the property. And they do assess those different assets.
And one follow-up then, the other offers are from private entities. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So I just, again, this is such an incredibly important piece in this network that we want to make sure we're as competitive as we can be to acquire it.
Yes, Vince.
I'm just curious. I'm assuming that the undeveloped part of the land couldn't be permitted to be developed right now because it's so sensitive. So that land could be fairly safe if in the event that we don't get the property, is there a way to preserve that and or even purchase that undeveloped land?
Yeah.
Mitigate the problems from that site. I mean, we obviously want it, but just as a backup.
Absolutely. And so we, currently the sellers of the property, the willing sellers, are wanting to sell the whole property, right? The motel and the back 23 acres. Depending if we are or not the successful acquirer of the property, we also do remain interested in, trying to acquire maybe the back portions of the property too, because as you said, they're not buildable. They're significantly less dollars than the front portions of the property. But that remains to be seen who is the successful bidder on it. And if we are not, we hope to kind of continue the discussions in the future on the, whoever is the owner, if we could acquire it, or obviously, per the rules of the regional plan, that area will not be buildable. But it remains to be seen what a future owner may or may want to do with that portion of the property.
So essentially the purchase price is based on the developed portion of that property only.
A very significant portion of it, yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other questions from members of the committee? Alexis, do you have any questions? Barbara?
No questions. Thank you.
State.
Oh, Barbara has a question.
Yes, Barbara, please.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know if you could hear me or not. And I'm sorry I'm in. So how much from each state are you thinking you're going to ask the states for?
We're currently pursuing only state of California funding and plus the TRPA mitigation fund. So no funding is coming from Nevada for this because it is the property is in state of is within California jurisdiction.
But you're asking Tahoe Regency to give money, correct?
Yeah.
Correct.
So that is from Nevada. That's Nevada money, correct? Yeah.
No, Barbara, the monies that are generated for the CTC, for the excess coverage mitigation fee, come from projects within California. So Nevada Division of State Lands runs the program on the Nevada side that gets the money from Nevada projects and mitigation fees. So it really is just arising from California side mitigation funds that are generated from California side projects.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to double check and make sure. Thank you for that.
Jen, I had one last question. You said that typically TRPA collects about $375,000 annually in mitigation fees. Is that California and Nevada combined?
That is a good question. That was a question that was actually raised by one of our partners. So we were looking into it actually just yesterday. I may need to look into that further just to make sure I'm 100% sure on that, unless Chris has the answer to that question.
That's basically the California side generates on average about $370,000 a year.
Okay.
So we're talking about 10 years worth of excess coverage.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, right. It's going to take a while to rebuild that fund, that acquisition fund.
Yeah, okay. But this is like the only thing better than this would be if we could get mixed lumber, right?
Yeah. Okay. All right. We've got Amy Rutledge on the line. Amy, do you have anything to add to this conversation?
Good morning, everybody. All I was going to say is I really wanted to thank you. Obviously, this has been a joint effort for a long time. We're excited about your partnership on this. And it is a somewhat complex transaction where we're trying to keep our options open and also maximize our matching partners. So I know we've talked through most of those pieces, but, we stand ready to answer any questions as we move forward to the best of our ability. Obviously, we have to keep ongoing real estate negotiations and those details confidential, but thanks for all your really good questions today. And we've asked all those same questions and more. Thank you.
Amy, thank you. And I need to unmute. Does somebody mute me? Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Any further questions from members of the committee? Okay, seeing none, we will go ahead and move on to public interest comments on this item. Any member of the public wishing to address the Operations and Governance Committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person or by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on and unmuted by a TRPA staff member. Any members of the audience wishing to comment on this item? All right, seeing none. Maria, anyone online?
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised to make public comment.
Okay, thank you. Then we will go ahead and close public comment on this item. Again, this was informational only. However, we'll be returning to this committee next month for a recommendation to the governing board.
When they're ready to proceed and request the funds, yes.
Okay, all right, thank you. All right, that brings us to agenda item number 6, quarterly treasurer's report. This, it too, is information only. Chris?
Okay, get another chart, please. Try to cram everything onto one view graph. I know we're running a little bit late. The upshot of this is everything is within our investment policies. And in fact, everything's pretty much short and safe as we go through the current fluctuations in interest rates and things. Interestingly enough, because of the movement, because we're so short and coming in and out, our unrealized loss in the principal group pool basically hasn't changed since February. It's been the same level. Next month, Bruce Remington, who is our investment advisor for principal group, will be in and he will do his annual briefing to this committee in November. Other than that, I don't have anything else unless you have questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions by members of the committee? Okay, Alexis, Barbara, any questions on this item?
No questions, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara?
No.
Okay, all right, thank you. We'll now go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the Operations and Governance Committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Maria, any members of the public wishing to comment who are joining us virtually?
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised for public comment.
I presume that nobody in the audience is interested in commenting, so we will close public comment. And as again, this was information only. That brings us to the agenda item number 7, upcoming topics. Chris?
Yeah, just a heads up, next month will be a fairly full agenda for this committee as well. We hope to have the actual funding release coming forward to you for this project. There are a couple of transportation items with an OWP amendment and some TDA allocations. We will be bringing forward the rental car mitigation fund increase. This is for TTD's financing. So we promised them we'd accelerate that and bring that ahead of the other mitigation funds. And then I mentioned Bruce Remington, our advisor, will be coming in to talk about investments. December, we hope to have the audit for you. They're just finishing up field work now. We're working on that. And then that's it for this year.
Okay. All right. Any questions? Chris. All right. So we're going to have kind of a robust discussion next month. Okay. So we will move on to a public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the committee on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you'll be called on and unmuted by a TRPA staff member. Any member of the public joining us here today wishing to comment on this item? Seeing none. Maria, anyone online?
Madam Chair, there's no public comment on this item.
Okay, thank you. Then we will close public comment on this item. Again, this was informational only. That brings us to agenda item number 8, committee member comments. Any comments by members of the committee? This has been a good discussion this morning. I appreciate everyone participating. Alexis, anything to add?
No, nothing to add. Thank you.
And Barbara, anything you would like to add before we move to the adjournment? Okay, thank you. That brings us to the last item on the agenda, which is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn? I thought I just did the public comment. Maybe not. Okay, and we will move on public interest comment. Yeah, I did.
Flipped order.
Okay, all right. We have one last public comment. It's so redundant. This is our general public comment period. If any member of the public wishes to address the committee on this item, please raise your hand now, either in person or by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone, and you will be called on and unmuted by a TRPA staff member. Any member of the audience wishing to comment on any items not addressed earlier today on the agenda? Seeing none, Maria, anyone online?
Madam Chair, there is no public comment.
Okay, then we will finally move to adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Madam Chair, we had one hand go up right here.
Oh, all right.
Aaron Vanderpool.
Good morning. I was just wondering, did I miss agenda item 3?
Aaron is part of the appellants in the next for the next committee, Aaron, which is legal. This is still operations. It's running a little late, so we're going to start in just a few minutes.
Oh, thank you. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
You're on time.
Unless you'd like to comment on our September financial statements.
No, thank you.
Okay, Aaron, thank you. All right. That was quick. Okay. All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn? All right. Thank you. We have a motion to adjourn. A meeting is adjourned and legal committee will commence. Committee meeting will commence when? Immediately? Are you looking for heads?
I'm looking for heads. I think Bill walked out. They're all in the hallway. So let's say in 5 minutes.
Okay, so the legal committee will commence its meeting at, that would be 9:50, right?
Yes.
Thank you, everyone.